I don't know exactly what you have in mind, but one thing I'd like to do is to start with my first recollections of the church.
Well, you know, that's one of the things I was going to suggest, because, I mean, you're not the oldest church member. I think IT is the senior member in terms of age, but you were in the church before IT.
Yeah.
Do you remember who the pastor was when you first came?
Yeah. Bill Parker.
It was Bill Parker.
Uh-huh.
So Reverend Utzler had just left.
Yeah.
And he's the one that was Polly DaCosta's brother,
right? Right, exactly.
And Parker was fairly short term. He didn't stay very long.
Right, and he left. He just disappeared.
Is that right?
Left his wife and baby in the parsonage, which at that time was on Dixie Trail, I guess. And so we sort of inherited them.
And they stayed after he left?
Well, they had nowhere else to go. And no money.
Uh-huh.
She finally got a teaching job.
Right.
But it was a terrible situation. I've never seen Bill Parker since. It turned out he went to work for a program called Save the Children, which you've no doubt heard of. And we thought it was so ironic, Save the Children when he left his own job. No means of support.
Right.
But anyhow, yeah. His wife was a lovely person. We were very fond of her.
Right.
I liked him, but he, I guess, had a faith crisis and just left.
Right. And then Gay Norris came in? Is that who followed?
I believe that's right.
Do you have a pretty good memory of Gay? I know he was a friend of Marge's. They had roots in Connecticut.
Yeah, we were we were close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still in touch with Dodie.
That's his wife?
Wife, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. She's in, and their daughter came to see us a year or so ago.
Right.
Her special area of interest is bears.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. She's a zoologist.
Is she still up in the New England area?
She lives somewhere in the West.
Does she?
Mm-hmm. There were two daughters.
Yes.
And a son, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some problems, but he got himself together, and I think he's doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me go back to my childhood.
Yeah, please.
I, of course, grew up here in Raleigh, and my folks were charter members of West Raleigh Presbyterian Church.
Charter members.
Mm-hmm. That church met in Pullen Hall on the campus for quite a long time until they built the church where it is now.
Where it is now.
And my father tried to be a Presbyterian. He was a Quaker background,
mm-hmm.
and it just was a bad match.
Right.
He continued to be a member. He was an elder in that church, but he just felt he couldn't subscribe to all the things you're supposed to. So he resigned that, but he continued to support the church. But we went as a family to where he thought the good preaching was. And the good preaching, and from his point of view, was at Pullen, where Edwin McNeil Petit was the pastor, and at United. So and in all cases, it was more than just going to church. My folks became good friends with the pastors at United and also at Pullen.
Yeah. Now, what age were you during the period you're now talking about?
I must have been, in my early teens.
Early teens. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the 1930s.
Yeah. And the first pastor that I remember very well from United was it'll come to me in a minute.
There was a Carl Voss.
Who, that's the one that's the I'm one trying, you're to trying to think of. Yeah. Right. He was a bachelor, and he was, I think, Union Theological, trained under Reinhold Niebuhr, mm-hmm. good preacher, and a very nice guy, and a very eligible bachelor, mm-hmm. and lots of people were interested mm-hmm.
right.
in him. But he was a good friend of my folks, and I remember from coming there, a place for meals, and he was a, and I stayed in touch with him. Over the years, he became kind of a Zionist. That is, he was a strong believer in the state of Israel. And we had some disagreements on that, but otherwise. And I think he left the ministry and became a psychologist and did counseling. But he, and also, you know, I think he became a Unitarian. But then it was Alan Robinson, who was, you no doubt remember him, because he came back, retired here in Raleigh after a very distinguished career, and he had been a good friend of my folks, because my father was YMCA Secretary at State, and he had 9-month appointment, and in the summer he worked at Blue Ridge, which is a YMCA conference ground near Black Mountain, and and my folks built a cottage on the property adjoining the Blue Ridge property, and then Alan Robinson bought a cottage in that same, what they call, we called High Top Colony. So we saw a lot of him and admired him. As you know, he was the one that started the Institute of Religion, and he was quite a scholar, and as I say, had quite a distinguished career after he left us. So I had that connection with the church, and but I never joined a church until after we were married, and Carolyn and I met in the summer of 1942 at Blue Ridge. She was a student at the University of Kentucky, and I was a student at Carolina, and we both worked at Blue Ridge. All the work was done by students, and they also had courses you could take and got college credit for. And so we met in the summer of 42, and in the January of 43, I was drafted and went into the Army and was for 3 years. So we courted by mail, and when I was on, if I had a furlough, I went there, as well as to see my folks. And then...
Now, part of your Army time was spent in the European theater.
Right.
Right.
And I was in the 26th Division, which was the New England National Guard Division, which was full of rebels. And the... we went overseas, and we were joined Patton's Third Army, and went all the way across Europe, and ended up in Linz, Austria, was where we were when the war ended. I say we, there weren't many of us who did that. Wendy King, who's the only person left that I have any contact with, and I were company runners for A Company, and that meant being liaison between company and battalion. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had radios and they had telephones, but the telephones were usually knocked out by artillery, and the telephones frequently... didn't work. So we were the last resort for communication. And we didn't realize it at the time, but that was a very happy coincidence for us, because it meant that we were up and about, and so many of were in holes constantly, and feet constantly wet. So as a matter of fact, we just lost a lot of guys with trench foot, mm-hmm. and of course a lot with also artillery and small arms and stuff. But anyhow, that was we were in Lynn's, but there weren't many of us who had started. Mm-hmm. Wendy and I were two that were, and maybe a few more. But anyhow, when it came back, I had two more years in Carolina, which I did and finished up. And still had some GI time, bill time. By then, Carolyn had, of course, graduated, and she had taken a job in Youngstown, Ohio, as teenage director of the YWCA. And she came back, though, after, I think, 2 years, back to Lexington, and was the vice secretary at the University of Kentucky. So that seemed like a good place for me to go to do my graduate study, and it turned out that it was. The people at the University of Kentucky thought anybody who was at Carolina was great.
Is that right?
So I got an assistantship right away, and just, they were so good to me. And so Carolyn and I courted another couple of years, and then finally got married in 1948. And neither one of us had a job, and of course we didn't have much money. And we came to Raleigh to visit my parents, and we've laughed about it since. It must have scared them to death.
So where were you living immediately after your marriage?
We were in Lexington.
You were in Lexington.
Uh-huh, yeah. In fact,
and at that when you married in Lexington, did you have any idea you would be moving back to North Carolina?
I had no idea. No. We didn't know. You don't remember, but it was sort of like it has been recently. Jobs were very scarce. You had all these GI graduating, mm-hmm. right. and there just weren't many jobs. And I wrote and interviewed, but couldn't get a job. So anyhow, when we came back here, as I say, I think it probably scared my folks to death. So they promptly started helping us find jobs. Mm-hmm. And Carolyn got a job almost immediately as the teenage director at the YWCA.
Right.
And I took what I thought was a temporary job in the bookstore. And stayed there 11 years, so it wasn't so temporary. But it turned out that I really enjoyed that job. It had no prestige to speak of, but I knew everybody on campus because everybody had to come to the bookstore.
Sure.
All the faculty members. And so I had a lot of friends on campus.
Yeah. So when you came back to Raleigh, did you immediately identify with a specific church or not?
We shopped around.
Mm-hmm. And when you were attending United Church your first time in Raleigh,
uh-huh.
your membership was still at...
You
did not have a membership.
I didn't have a membership.
Right. Carolyn, so during your years at Pullen, you had never joined Pullen?
No. Mm-hmm. Carolyn, of course, had been a member of the Disciples of Christ.
Right.
And so anyhow, we... And of course, I knew both Pullen and United, mm-hmm. and so we decided United was where we would like to be. I really wasn't much of a church person, but as happens with people, and we've seen it happen in our church, people like Sam Johnson, and who become very much involved in the church, but had no interest, sure. really. Sure. They just wanted to come and come to the forum. And right. But anyhow, so we'd, and of course we met there. So many of the people who later who became our close friends, people like the Smallwoods and the Eccles and Herb and Dot Eldridge, I don't know whether you remember them. He was in the English department. And we had practically the whole economics department was a member of our church.
Were Norman and Scotty Bell already there at the time?
If they weren't, they came shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. So it was a heavily university mm-hmm. congregation.
Kay Cope, was she in it back
yeah,
then?
Yeah, Kay Cope and Ralph Cope.
Mm-hmm. And Harlan Brown and
Harlan and Helen. There. That's when the Unitarians were still a part of United. Mm-hmm. Harlan, had there been a Unitarian, he would have gone there. Mm-hmm. But they continued kind of a dual membership between the Unitarians and United. Helen had been, grew up a Congregationalist in New England. Harlan was a free thinker who probably wouldn't have been in a church if it hadn't been for Helen.
Mm-hmm. It's remarkable the ties between NCSU libraries and the UU Church and the United Church, because you go back to then and it was Harlan Brown, and then yeah. IT came and he was yeah. in...
Yeah,
and then Susan Nutter now is in the Unitarian Church, I believe.
Is she?
I think so.
I don't know, but anyhow, the Hoffmans were really instrumental in getting a lot of people in the church. They would have parties at their home,
really,
and invite prospective members to come, mm-hmm. and there they met other folks from the church.
So when you came into the church, was Arnold already serving as the choir director at the time, and Peggy as the organist, or did that come later?
No, Hallie Sedale was the choir director, mm-hmm. and Billy Sedale, her son, was the organist. Mm-hmm. Very talented musicians, both of them, but their involvement with the church was mostly the music. They sure. didn't get involved in much else. But anyhow, Peggy and Arnold were very active, and they influenced a lot of folks, I think, to join the church. Probably, it certainly encouraged us to.
But they maintained active social life, had a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, in the church. And, of course, Peggy wrote those histories.
Of course, yeah.
And I guess, I can't remember when they took over. Certainly when we moved to the present location, the Sedales had faded away. I don't know what happened to them. The Sedales ran a photo studio, and they were very good musicians, and we had very good choirs, mm-hmm. but they weren't active in the church in any other way that I know of. Don't think so. But Peggy and Arnold, of course, were active throughout the whole church,
sure.
not just music, but... So that was my introduction to the church long before we became members. We had, and my folks were very close friends of the Vaughns, Lee and Lulu Vaughn.
Yes.
In fact, when Carolyn and I came back for a visit, they had us with my folks for dinner. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the church was going through that split over the race thing.
The split that I'm aware of is one that occurred in 1951. Is that the one you're talking
was
about?
Was that the one
there
about
was a
Ralph?
I have read about a congregational meeting that took place in 1951 that divided the congregation. I think, pretty significant.
I think that was it. Mm-hmm. And it all was over the Institute of Religion in a way, because they invited Ralph Bunche to speak.
Yes, that's the one.
And that's that led some people to leave the church. If you say a lot of people, there weren't a whole lot of people in the church to begin with, but some important people did leave, and some.
So was your dad's connection with the Vaughns, did that start on campus or did it start in the church?
I think it started on campus. Professor Vaughn was in mechanical engineering. And they lived not too far from my folks. We lived on Chamberlain Street. They lived on Enterprise Street, which is just about two blocks away. And my mother and Mrs. Vaughn were close friends. They were in a little group called the Friendly Dozen. It was a sort of like a book club, but it didn't do books. And then the other couple, if they were close to, were the Clarks, Joe and Elsie Clark. And of course, both Joe Clark and Lillian Vaughn were kind of pillars of the church.
Right.
And
Joe Clark lived into the mid-1980s, as I recall.
And he and, after Harlan died and his wife, Helen, and Joe Clark became an item.
Really?
Yeah. And they were very, very fond of each other, and it was wonderful for both of them. It just was great. But
this group, the Friendly Dozen that you referred to, was that a group that met? Did they have regular meetings?
Uh-huh. I think they met once a month.
So, I mean, it sounds like sort of a precursor to Monday lunch group or something like that, a group of people in the church that met for a rather...
They weren't all from the church.
Right, which has been the case always with Monday lunch group.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. I don't know exactly how that came into being.
Were they all women?
Yeah.
They were
all women. And they exchanged...
Can you remember some other names of people that were in that group?
One was named Dario, and her husband was in physics on campus. Mm-hmm. Another one was Dixon, and he was in physics, and his wife was a part of that Friendly Dozen. And
this goes back to the United Church, not the present location. Is that right?
Yeah. And it was not a church organization.
It was not a church organization, right.
But just a lot of the church women were part of it.
Did they meet at the church or in people's homes?
No, they met in people's homes. Sort of just moved around from home to home.
Okay, so back in the days when there was this women's group, the Friendly... What did you say?
Friendly Dozen. Uh-huh.
Were there any special groups in the church that you got involved with, other than just going to the big church, to the regular church services?
Well, there were circles.
There were circles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And was that for men and women?
No, that was just for women.
That was for women, yeah. Well, that's the way it was in the little Methodist church I grew up in. The circles were women.
And then we did have a men's club, they called it, and we used to meet, I think it was once a month, and we would, since most of the members were on campus, we met on campus at lunchtime, and we would have speakers come and talk to us, and we'd meet in Old Liaison Dining Hall and have lunch, and some people came who weren't members of the church, and they just liked to be part of that.
Do you recall whether the church attracted many students from campus during that period?
I don't think so. We've never been successful in attracting students. But one thing, there weren't many students who came from the background of I guess it wasn't UCC at that time, but for UCC, but we never have been very good about that, either from state or from Meredith or anywhere. I don't know why exactly, but I guess we didn't have a...
You always had much more success with the faculty than with the students.
Yeah, and I guess it's, you know, many churches and many denominations had campus ministers, and we didn't have one. Our minister served as a campus minister. He went to meetings with the other campus ministers, but he or she didn't have much time to work to recruit students. So that was an area that everybody's always been disappointed about. But it's just the way it was. B.F. Brown was the dean of what is now Arts and Sciences, and he was the person who started the forum, and they met on at night in the church downtown, and it was considered quite a radical crowd. They were dealing at that time, evolution was a big issue. But Dean Brown was a power in the church and on the campus, and I guess he was responsible for attracting a lot of faculty members.
So, the kind of the kind of thing you're describing there with B.F. Brown, was that, that his name? It was more idea based than action based, right? I mean, he when they were talking about things like evolution, it was breaching what had perhaps been taboo subjects.
And it was very, it was a controversial, not just in the church, but on the campus, you know.
Of course.
But anyhow, that forum, and this was before my time, but I'm told attracted, they'd have, maybe 100 people who'd come to that on Sunday night.
Right.
And it was a very interesting group of people.
I'm sure.
So that they called it the Open Forum. And
and how often did it meet?
I think they met it, I don't know, I think at least once a month, maybe. I don't, if they met every Sunday night, I'm not sure. Probably varied.
And then when the forum moved to a Sunday morning time, was it basically the same group of people?
Yes, but not nearly, not as many.
Not as many. Probably because it didn't bring as many outsiders in.
Right. That's sure. In fact, there was a time, I think, when the forum folded completely. Mm-hmm. And then it started up again. And there were people like Howard Miller, who was rarely seen in church, but was very active in the forum.
Right.
And Harlan, who didn't enjoy church, but enjoyed the intellectual stimulation from the forum. And so the church has always been, As I see it, in addition to true believers, a lot of seekers, people who were struggling to find meaning in life, and also just interested in social concerns.